Major Theory presents Blue Dope, a podcast from the inquisitive minds of Blue and Olivia Dope, as they sit down and pick the brains of some of your favorite entertainers and entrepreneurs. On this week's episode, the author of The Catch Me If You Can, One Woman's Journey to Every Country in the World, Jessica Nabongo.
Thank you for sitting with us, chatting with us today. We are very, very excited to talk to you about all the amazing things that you are doing and have done.
I don't know what we're talking about, but
I'm just trying to get in your head and get to know you and the amazing person that is Jessica Nabongo. Thank you for coming through to Blue Dope Podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I think everyone knows you for being really the first Black woman in history to visit every country in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an amazing feat in itself, but definitely here on Blue Dope, we'd love to understand how you even got to this point. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we take it all the way back. So from what I understand, are you born and raised in Detroit?
Yes, I'm born and raised in Detroit. I live in Detroit. I'm in Detroit right now.
I heard it's so cold in the D, but
yo, you know what's so crazy? It's like 30 degrees here right now, and what? It hasn't really set in. But then I'm like, to be fair, it's November. Like, I don't know how right. We got to November, but it is
yeah.
November.
Yeah.
So. Right. So you have to kind of understand this. We're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're two kids from Brooklyn, but I want to understand Detroit. What was it like for you growing up in Detroit in the time and era that you have? And what part of Detroit specifically? Are you from like the 8 Mile, Eminem, or paint the landscape for us?
Every time people not from Detroit talk about 8 Mile, it's hilarious. So my parents are Ugandan immigrants. So, you know, I definitely like grew up in a Ugandan household. I grew up in the 80s. You know, most of my parents' friends are immigrants. So Filipina, Kenyans, Congolese, Indians, you know, so I definitely grew up in like a multicultural environment. I went to private schools in the suburbs from preschool to sixth grade. So all white schooling, basically. And then in seventh grade, my parents sent me to Bates Academy, which is like a really great school in Detroit. It's a blue ribbon school, and all Black. So it was definitely a culture shock for me.
It was a reverse
culture shock. Like, my neighborhood was definitely Black, like a upper middle class neighborhood. Okay. But being in like a school environment, it was a harsh change. I will say that. but everything's moved out by high school. I went to BPS. I went to Renaissance High School. I graduated and moved to New York. Actually, I went to undergrad in New York.
Okay, nice. Where in New York?
I went to St. John's.
Oh.
So you were hanging around like the J. Cole's of the world.
Yeah, me and Jermaine were very close friends.
Wow.
Vanessa Simmons was there at the same time as well. So Eve, who's Jermaine's manager and the president of Dreams, like all of us were there together.
No doubt.
Small world.
No
it was
doubt.
Good times. I know, crazy. It's so crazy. Just looking at all of the talent that came out of that, like 4 years.
Yes,
it's really incredible to see. Like, you know, it's like Stacey Barth. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah, yeah.
Stacey was there. Was his Carl Pierre, who's an amazing photographer.
Yes.
He was there. So it's like, it's cool to like look around and you're like, oh, St. John's.
Yes. We've actually had Pierre as a guest on our podcast as well. Nice. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So we were all there at the same time.
At the Haraya parties, I'm sure.
We went to
Hofstra. So Jermaine was the president when I was in a VP. We were on the board.
All
the
on Haraya. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a picture somewhere of all of us together.
I just used to pull up to all y'all parties. That's all I did.
I love that. That's so cool.
With Spinfo DJing.
Yes.
Oh my God. Like you, that was, it was so amazing. And so many of us are still in touch now.
That's nice. Awesome.
So Amazing.
That's awesome.
So now, I mean, just from your family coming from Uganda, it doesn't sound like you moved into like the super inner city of Detroit. You had a nice, or did you just go to school in the suburbs? Like, how did that aspect work?
That's interesting. So like, yeah. So Detroit has like a few of these, like, I would say upper middle class neighborhoods. You know, Detroit is mostly single family homes.
Okay.
So like I grew up with a literal white picket fence and like a big front yard, a big backyard. And so there's all these little pockets, and my parents kept us super sheltered. But Detroit is also like, if you go 1 mile the wrong way, it's like,
so
like, people from Detroit who are listening will know if I say Schoolcraft, like Schoolcraft, I didn't go to the other side of Schoolcraft. And so my parents were like very clear about where I could and could not go growing up. And so a lot of what I would see about Detroit on TV, I'd never seen those parts of the city because I was so sheltered. And, you know, because I'm not American, it's not like I have family living in those right. parts of the city. So it was literally just like, you know, I would go to my little suburban school and back. And like, so, yeah.
But then somehow you flew on a plane to these other places, just way out your normal cluster.
So my parents love to travel. So they would actually leave us at home sometimes. I have two older sisters. And sometimes, like, they went on cruises to the Bahamas with their friends or whatever. Or, like, they would switch off. Like, my mom would go to Uganda and my dad would stay home with us. Or my dad would go and my mom would stay home. And then sometimes they took us. But I've been traveling internationally since I was about 4. I went to Canada for the first time, but like I can see Canada out my window.
You can drive there.
Right. So it's like, you know, it's just going over the bridge or through the tunnel. But then like I went to London on the way to Uganda for the first time when I was 6. And then it just went from there, like Jamaica, Mexico, Bahamas. My parents really just love to travel and were very kind to sometimes take my sisters and I with them.
So that was definitely something that I wanted to ask in my mind. Like, what inspired you to start this journey of seeing every country in the world? So there we have it. It's your parents.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, I grew up in a home. I feel like we're the last generation where like we remember encyclopedias and atlases that were, you know, not Wikipedia, an encyclopedia.
Like, open the book. Tangible.
Right, exactly. So I grew up in a home with two sets of encyclopedias, a really big atlas, which my mom still has. Like, I'm like, this, I will all of this to me. I still have my childhood globe in my house now. And so grew up very much in that environment where getting on a plane was not a big deal. You know, it was like, okay, well, we're going on vacation. When we would go to Uganda, we would go for a month.
Wow.
So that's why when I started working, I took vacation days. Cause I'm just like, growing up, we vacationed like every year. It was a big thing. You go on vacation.
Right.
So it very much became part of my lifestyle. And so in 2008, I was working for a pharmaceutical company and just was over it. Like, I was doing really great at the company. Within 2 years, I got promoted 3 times, but I was just like, is this all there is?
Right.
And so I ended up getting a teaching job in Japan. And my family was like, are you insane?
Yes.
The company had laid off 20,000 people. I had not gotten laid off. My management was like, are you stupid?
Wow.
Because I think at that time I was 23. I hadn't even turned 24. So I graduated a little bit early. I graduated at 21 and I've been working for them. And they were just like, the economy is going down and you have a very good job. You are out of your mind. And I was just like, no, I'm going to just go and see what happens. And like, if it doesn't work out, I'll come back. You know what I mean? That was my thought. I was like, it's y'all will still be here. And so I shaved my head and my family thought I lost my mind. And I like packed up my house, put it in storage, and I moved to Japan. And while I was there, I started blogging. And I think, you know, I met so many people from around the world who'd like been traveling, like just like endlessly. And I was like, oh my God. And so when I was in Japan, I was like, I'm not going to go back to the US for 3 years. And so I didn't. I ended up living abroad for 7 years.
Wow.
Like I would go home to see my family, but I took 9 months off between that job in Japan. And then I moved to London and I did my master's at the London School of Economics. And that 9 months, I just started traveling and I started my blog, The Catch Me If You Can, then in 2009.
Wow.
And so that it just spiraled from there. So since my early 20s, I wanted to visit every country in the world. And so I just did it.
Now you didn't just do it. You did it, did it.
I did it.
But I think the first question that comes to mind for me when I hear about someone traveling to every country, how do you even afford that? Like, what do you, where's the income
the
come from?
The number one question.
Of course.
Surprisingly. So it was a combination of a bunch of different things. So first of all, I traveled a lot when I had a 9-to-5.
Okay.
So I quit my last job in 2015. And I think by then I had to have been to like 40 countries already, wow, somewhere around that.
Wow.
Because I know before Instagram existed, I'd been to more than 30 countries. So like, I've been doing this, you yes. know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop right there because I feel like a lot of people travel now for the gram and it's weird. Oh. It's a weird thing. I don't understand it. Like, it's like, I got to go here just to take a picture and
just to take a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, it's so true. And it's so weird because like, you know, the internet is great. The internet is also a disgusting cesspool of evil people.
Yes.
And so, you know, there was definitely people who were like, I was just doing it for the gram. And I'm like, no, like check the record books. Like what I've been on, you know what
seats.
I mean? Like I've been living
check
abroad, you know, like we're not doing that. I've been doing photography. I've been doing all of like, I can post pictures that I took pre-Instagram that someone would have a desire to take
yes.
now because right. that's just how I lived my life. Like I always loved aesthetically beautiful things. I joined Instagram in 2012 when I was living in Italy, actually, because I was like, oh my God, it's social media for photography.
Right.
I've been doing photography for almost 10 years. I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, like it's interesting because it's twofold. I think for a lot of countries, it's really great because you look at a country like Morocco, which Instagram has literally made tourism to Morocco boom, you know? And so there's people who are on the receiving end of that in a really positive way.
Yes.
Like it's increasing incomes for people in these countries. At the same time, I just really question how deep people go into the culture. Cause now I feel like, and granted, like I went to every country in the world. So obviously I was counting countries, but now it just seems like people are just doing it so fast paced. And, you know, I just wonder how much people are actually getting out of it versus just right. like, I'm
check.
On a plane.
Yeah.
I'm in front of this thing. All right, let's go to the next one. Like people, you know, spending 24 hours in each country and just like going to as many as possible. You know,
it's not the same.
So my question is, as a woman, when you're traveling, are you traveling alone? Like, how does it work? Like, do you have a system in place for when you do travel alone? Like, because I took my first solo trip a couple years ago to Costa Rica and it was fun. But at the same time, I was just like, in the back of my mind, you really got to be careful. So how do you handle all of that as a woman?
I'm Anna, a transgender woman.
And I'm Cam, your dad.
And this is The Transgenda.
Join Anna as she chronicles her transition and Cam as he learns how to be a supportive parent.
This podcast is about embracing differences and finding common ground.
It's a roller coaster of emotions, laughter, and genuine connection.
Tune in to new episodes of The Transgenda bi-weekly. Subscribe and listen to The Transgenda on your favorite podcast platform.
Love you all, except the bigots.
So one thing is my first solo trip was to Costa Rica. So I love that. Yeah. In 2009, that was my first solo trip as well. So I've been to 89 countries alone, a lot in the Middle East, a lot in Africa, just all over. And you know what? Honestly, I don't think too much about it. I think the biggest safety precaution for me that makes me comfortable is that I stay in hotels because I like having a concierge. I like that there's someone there 24 hours a day. If anything crazy happens, I could just run into the hotel. You know what I mean? So that's how I safeguard myself. But I'm not afraid of people. And the fact of the matter is, as women, no matter where you are in the world, you're most likely to be assaulted by someone you know.
No. Yeah.
Random assault is so rare that I really just want women to like lose that idea. If something happens, it's just really awful, but it's bad luck. But the chances of you being assaulted are so slim when you're traveling that I just want women to like release that fear. I literally, you know, I've been to like Sudan by myself. Like I met friends there, but like South Sudan, I've been in places that people couldn't imagine. I traveled there on my Pakistan. I did completely solo Iraq. Like I flew there. There were a couple friends I met up with there, but like I was in Iran solo the entire time for a week. So like, and I came out pretty unscathed. I mean, the scary things that happened to me is like in Miami, cops pulled a gun on me, like point blank range.
In Miami. All these countries, but in Miami.
Yeah. In Paris, like someone tried to steal my cell phone. And in Rome, a taxi driver tried to kiss me. And so that obviously freaked me out.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually really scary.
Right.
But you know, like those are the worst thing. And then I had like this immigration thing in Pakistan. That was crazy because they like basically, they were like groping me for drugs. It was wild and traumatic. But like, you know, I've never had anyone steal anything from me in a hotel room. I don't use hotel safes. Like I just don't. And I leave money in my bags, my passport. But I really think it's about like, I feel like my positive energy protects me legitimately.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. I'm a believer of that too. I also have another question. I've seen different articles as well as your Instagram post a couple months ago about fibroids and your journey with fibroids. And as a fellow fibroid warrior, does that play a role in your thriving to see the world and experience? Because I know I had my surgery a couple months ago. And it once I had my surgery, I'm like, okay, I need to do everything I'm here to do.
Girl. So I'm actually only 2.5 weeks post-op from my second myomectomy. Yeah. I'm like, you know, like I have on loose pants. Like that's why we had a bit of a delay, in scheduling.
Gotcha.
This. Yeah. So, and you know, I'm waiting. I'm like, right after this, I'm going to get this Amazon package to try and help my, incisions close. So it's seamless. Yeah, it's a challenge because for me, my fibroids gave me really bad cramps and really heavy bleeding. And like when I found out I had them, I was living in rural Benin, which is one of the poorest countries in the world. And I was bleeding for 3 weeks. And I literally called the U.S. Embassy because I was like, I don't even know what to do. And I'm like, I need a gyno. And so one of the counselors at the embassy, his wife was pregnant and had a good doctor. So we had to go 5 hours down to the Capitol on like a taxi bus. I don't know how much time you guys have spent on the continent, but it's like, you know, on and off, on and off. And I'm bleeding. So I'm like, excuse me, I need you to pull over because I got to change. And I was with my ex and he would have to like cover me because the bathroom is on the side of the road.
Wow.
So he has to cover me. And I'm just like, why is this life? And then that's when I found out I had fibroids there in Benin.
Not even in the U.S.
Not even in the U.S. It was a nightmare. And then they put me on hormone therapy. Then I moved to Italy after that. Woke up one day and I was like, oh, somebody was murdered in my bed while I was asleep. So I ended up going to a doctor. Yeah.
That's how bad it gets.
It gets really bad. It gets really, really bad depending on your fibroids. And so eventually, from the first time in Benin to when I had my first surgery, it was 4 years. I was living in DC and I had my first myomectomy and it was great. 2 years, you know, periods weren't that bad. It was great. And then they started coming back. Yeah, so I should have had surgery like 2 years ago, but I was busy traveling the world.
Yeah.
So I just had it 2 weeks ago. And, you know, recovering from surgery on your core is literally the worst thing ever.
The worst.
So I'm just here like being, you know, slow and trying to be patient with my body. But yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, just having to change your tampon or whatever in a bathroom, we're in like a squat toilet.
No, it's not sanitary. It's just none of the above.
When I was in Algeria, I just hadn't planned. And I had to tell my tour guide, I was like, I need tampons. And he's like, what? So I had to like explain it to rent. And so then like we went and then they didn't take credit cards. And I was like, can you buy this for me?
At least he didn't take you to like a Pampa spot or something.
Right. Right, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
But so, yeah. So, I mean, but that's the reality. And like when you're traveling full time, you know, I know a lot of women who will like avoid traveling when they're on their period. But the reality is women in every single country in the world deal with their period. And so,
So you didn't let it stop you. You just kept traveling, checked on, and we gotta go to the side of the road. We gotta go to the side of the road. It is what it is.
We on the side of the road. I hated it, but we here. You know.
Yeah. I mean, Dope and I have had this conversation before, but I think, especially just as a black man, like it's something you get so used to hearing women having fibroids in our communities. As men, we haven't paid attention to it. It's like, oh yeah, you'll be all right. You all right? Oh, you have a surgery? Cool. Good luck.
Oh my God.
Like, it's so normalized and it's bad.
It's bad that it's normalized.
Seen that video where they put this belt on a man so he can feel cramped?
I feel like there should be something where these men experience what having
fibroids. We don't want to experience it, but we're going to pay attention to your experience. We're going to understand and respect it more.
And we do it every month.
Yes.
Every month.
Yes.
There's a post on my page where I asked women, like, what have you done while having horrible cramps? There were women in the military.
Mm.
There were women who were firefighters. And it was just like, you know, I just think about all of the things we do. Yeah. For me, in September, I was in France at a conference and I was introducing the Prince of Monaco. And literally an hour before, I'm like, cramps. People were bringing me all types of pain medication. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm just like, this is so horrible. And then I'm like, yes. And so here is His Serene Highness, Prince Albert of Monaco. You know what I mean? And like, my stomach is like, and you're like, I have to do it because this is life. So it's crazy. But
I want to get back to the money. I'm trying to understand this. Because
Okay, let's get back to money. So money, how did I pay for it? So, So what I was saying was like, I traveled a lot while I had a 9-to-5, right? Yeah. So I used my vacation time. So I got a lot of my numbers up then. And so by the time I was doing it full time, which was 2017, I'd already been to 60 countries. So that was just like, I paid for it as I worked. And so at that point, I had savings. I was running my own business. And
like a travel agency or?
Yeah, I had a travel agency, Jet Black, which we recently changed. It's now the Navongo list.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Branding. I love it.
Thank you. Because, you know, you got Zagat, you got Michelin, you have all these things. I'm like, let's do something with a Black woman's name.
Yes. So love it.
That, I hope, will be my legacy. Mm-hmm. So, in credit cards, right? Ooh. So granted, I got some debt, but I also had hella points.
Mm.
So I always put everything on my cards, everything. Like, I'm buying a snack, it's going on my credit card. And I still do that today. But now I'm able to afford to pay it off every month.
What's the best card, from your opinion, since you getting these points up?
Okay. Don't tell anybody.
Just us.
I hope nobody's listening. Chase Sapphire Reserve.
I've heard that.
Okay.
I'm an American Express Platinum. I've been an American Express card holder since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very loyal. I'm a Taurus. but as far as like points and how far they go,
Sapphire, I've been getting some love.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Cool. Reserve, not the preferred, the reserve. Hands down. Like, right, people are like, oh, but it's 550. That literally doesn't matter at all. It's so good.
Now, I think a lot of our listeners, you know, we have many entrepreneurs that are on the show, et cetera, but a lot of our listeners might be out there. Everyone's doing 9-to-5s for, you know, majority. So with that said, they might only have, you know, 2 weeks off a year, 3 weeks. What is your opinion on cruises versus flying somewhere to like the middle of Europe and taking trains everywhere for a week?
Okay. I have never in my entire life been on a cruise.
Wow.
I'm not a fan.
I feel honestly, I've never been on a cruise either, okay, but I feel like it's cheating when you're trying to see 200 countries.
I have no idea what it's like. You know, I've been to Miami and I see the boats and I'm like, dang, those boats are really big. And like, I've just never done it. I was supposed to, before the pandemic, Virgin, they actually ended up launching. We were supposed to do something and that was going to be my experience, but I've never done it. So I can't comment on that.
Okay.
But the thing is, I feel like we should stop trying to chase the number of places and really start chasing the depth of the experience. So I would say go less places and dive deeper. So I don't think it has to be like a go to Europe and take trains everywhere, unless you're like, go, like, for example, I just spent a week in Italy, I think in August. And we flew into Venice, then we took the train to Florence, took the train to Rome, and then I flew out from Rome. Like, that, I think, is worth spending a week in Italy versus, like, if every 2 days I was in a different country. Like,
okay. Yes.
You know?
Makes sense.
So I would say, I would challenge people to just go deeper versus, like, wider, if that makes sense.
Makes 100% sense.
Yeah. Have you ever been on a cruise?
I've never been on a cruise. I just don't even like the idea of being on a boat. Like, I'm thinking about whales and like, like, I'm thinking that way.
It's not Titanic, it's a big ship, so it's not that bad. I'm not a fan of the enclosed cabins.
Get claustrophobic.
Also, I think the main thing for me, I mean, I went on a cruise when I was 14 with my parents. And we went island hopping, maybe like to five Caribbean islands. And that was my first and last, because I was just like, I don't like the fact that we get off, they tell us when to get off the boat, when we land, when we sail to dock, and you only have several hours.
You're teased because you're right there. How far can you get into that country?
You only have a few hours before the ship takes off again. So,
and you're at the beach. Like, you're not,
you want to go scuba diving. Yeah. You want to go shopping. You want to do all these things, but you only have a few hours. So it's like,
they're like, go to the
Squid Games. Like, hey, what are you going to do?
So, I can't imagine that being pleasant. And it's like, also for local people, because I know like one of the cruise lines owns an area in Haiti. Like, they literally, they have a long-term lease or whatever, but like, so you go and it's like this enclosed area. So I'm like, you're not even getting a real feeling of like the actual country.
It's,
you
like
know?
A made up like, city.
Yeah. And it's all those people flooding one place at one.
Exactly. So as soon as most islands, because they have the boats or the ships dock in a certain area, all of the vendors are right here and somebody's braiding your hair and then somebody's putting on sandals all at the same time and they're giving you food and they're literally like this. But you don't even get to go on the island because everything is right there. So everybody kind of just stays out this outskirt because they don't want to also miss the ship if it leaves. So it doesn't make any sense.
The whole cruise ship community is doing very poorly right now post-COVID. We're not helping them right now. No one's going to go on a cruise after this episode.
I want to do it just because, like, I'm curious. I'm someone, I want to, like, experience everything. So at some point, I'm going to do it. I don't know when.
I say try at least once.
Nah,
at least one trip. I did the one trip and I was like, nah, I'm good.
Back to the money. I'm trying to understand it because I want to travel more and do it
points.
So
credit card points, and then I ended up, because obviously it was super expensive and I ran out of money. So October 2018 I ran out of money. And one of my friends was like, do a GoFundMe. I was like, ain't nobody gonna pay for me to travel. What? That sounds crazy.
How many countries were you at in 2018 before you?
So I was probably at around one. Oof. I would guess I was at like 140 something.
So you were getting closer to the end at that point. So the GoFundMe kind of made sense.
Like I had probably around 60 left. So I was in the 130s or 140s. So like between 50 and 60 countries left. And I had already had like a considerable amount of press.
Okay.
And so I ended up launching a GoFundMe and over 200 people actually donated $28,000.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll work for me because I got like maybe 10 countries on my list. I'll be like, yo, get me to 15, yo.
It's not going to happen. You know, and it was great. And I think the biggest thing is because I built community and so many people felt like, you know, they were a part of the journey. Yes. And they really were. It wasn't just me. Like they were coming along for the ride. And so people were really happy to support me because I think here's the thing, like I had a big social following and when I did it, honestly, I assumed I would get sponsors. Hear me now. I, in that whole journey, outside of like when I had to fly for work, I had one free trip, the South African Tourism Board. That's the only country that I went to and they paid like my flight and everything. Wow. I went to 195 countries. Wow. One of them was paid for. Do you know, I had, like I said, I had a social following. I'm talking about over 100K. My last country, I went to Seychelles. We flew Kenya Airways. Okay. So probably about 40 people, my friends and family, spent over $1,000, probably like $1,200 per flight to go to Kenya, to go to Seychelles. It was like New York, Nairobi, Nairobi, Seychelles. Kenya Airways did not give me a free ticket. I literally generated over $40,000 in revenue for that airline. They did not give me a free flight.
And this is after the New York Times feature. Oh.
CNN, BBC, everybody. This was my last country. Nobody gave me a free ticket. They were like, okay, well, we'll upgrade you to business class. But I'm, you know, I have status. So like, I really could have used like an upgrade.
You could use your own points.
Right.
And I flew back economy.
Wow. See,
So you know what I mean? Like, I feel like, and we can talk about a number of reasons why I'm not white. I'm not like skin. We can talk about we should do that podcast. That's a whole other thing my value seriously, like my perceived value in the marketplace, right? Yeah. Based on the way that I look. But yeah, I was shocked because a friend of mine, he's white. He didn't even have 10,000 followers at the time. And Marriott paid for his last 6 months of travel.
Come on. Like.
And meanwhile, everybody was like, oh, everybody's like, oh, she has sponsors. She has this.
Wow. None of the above. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So that's, you know, I don't necessarily talk about that all the time, but that is.
That's some BS. We gotta call it what it is.
Yeah.
Because you hear about influencers getting these free trips and, you know, whether it's even a brand saying, hey, we want to bring you to this place and wear this while you're here, and crazy.
And now, granted, I will say now, you know, people reach out to me and they're like, oh, we want to fly you here. And I'm like, you got to pay me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, I also feel like, here's the thing, like, I'm all about transparency because I feel like a lot of people on the internet are doing a disservice to people because people will be like, sign up for my class. I'm going to teach you how to travel the world, how to get paid to travel. It is so rare that I get paid to travel at the rate that I require. It's so rare. Wow. And I'm like, so when people say they're getting, a lot of people are getting free trips, mm-hmm. and a lot of people might be making like $1,400, $1,500, like maybe $2,000 or whatever. Like, I mean, I've definitely gotten paid now a lot of money, but it's not like these tourism boards are throwing tens of thousands of dollars for people. You know what I mean? They will fly you out. They will host you and do all that. That's one thing, but a lot of people are out here fronting. You know, like if somebody's paying me $500 to do something, I'm not about to charge you money for a class in the hopes of you build a social following and make $500.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's just wrong. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I'll say is that I've heard in other interviews, et cetera, they like to say that you're the first Black woman recorded to visit every country. And in my opinion, I don't see how it could be unrecorded for any Black woman to have done it before you.
Right.
With that said, how monumental is it for you just knowing that you really are the first in history?
Yeah, I mean, so the whole reason that came up is because I've actually never talked about this. I shall not go deep into it. But there was someone who came out and claimed they had done it.
No receipts.
Because that's what we're here for. We're the receipts.
They just said it. I did it, y'all.
And then the whole thing was, oh, you think just because it didn't happen on social media? Nope. Because again, everywhere I've been is not on social media. But here's the thing. You have to have receipt.
Right.
Period. Like, what? I could be like, oh, I was with Jeff Bezos when he flew
right
to space last week. Like, what? Receipt? No, no, you need receipts. I actually, on my website, I have receipts for every country.
Right. Yeah. Where are the passport stamps at?
Passport stamps. Picture.
Where's the old passports?
Right. Like, that's really all you need if that's the case.
Let's see them. Where they at?
It's easy, right?
If you did it, it's easy. And there's an organization called Nomad Mania, which has like the biggest like community of crazy people like me who've been to every country in the world.
I have a few friends a part of it. Yes.
Yes. It's really a bunch of weirdos and I love it. But they actually have a verification process that she failed.
Look at that.
So anyway, to like
help. You ain't got to lie, Craig. You ain't got to lie.
No, you know, like to help all of these people who were like, I'm a liar or whatever. We just we started saying documented, but it's like I'm literally the only Black woman who has done it. If we're counting proof as an indicator,
right?
There is a Black man who's done it, and his name is Slawek Maturi. He's half Kenyan, half Polish, and he lives in Poland. Oh, and we actually met this summer. He's been to every country in the world twice.
Wow!
And he's 80 away from doing it three times.
How old is he though? Because I know your number was you did it by 35.
Yeah, he's up there. He's in his 50s. He's in his 50s. Yes.
Do you have any want to do that? Or is it now about focusing on where you...
I will never go to every country. I don't know what it would take for that to happen again. I just... It would be by accident.
Yes.
I just... No. I really have a desire. There's so many places I want to go. I'm going to Egypt in December. I haven't been to Egypt since 2009. So like pre-Arab Spring, like so many different things. So I've never been to Scotland. Okay. It's part of the United Kingdom. So that's why I haven't been.
We get it.
Technicality.
Yeah. But there's so many places that I want to go back to. Iran, Saudi Arabia. There's so much that I want to see. Iran is amazing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, because I think, you know, the media sensationalizes things. We see that the other day, like out of the Middle East, I don't know which country it was, but everyone's hanging onto the plane flying out.
Afghanistan.
Right? It was Afghanistan. All right. So you've been to Afghanistan, obviously. So, I mean, in that region, like there's a sense that it wouldn't be comfortable for anyone to visit because they hate Americans, quote unquote. What was the vibe that you got?
Yeah, no, like that is not the vibe. I mean, I'm Black, so like I can't speak for how white people are received, but, you know, so Africa is number one.
Okay.
But my second favorite region is actually the Middle East. Okay. And like, some people say like the Middle East and North Africa or whatever, but it's my second favorite region because I'm like, y'all African, the culture, the customs, it's like the way people welcome you into their home. It's like, here's some tea, here's some food. You know, everybody is so warm and so welcoming. And I remember when I got to Iraq, I was on my period. I had cramps and I was supposed to like go out into the countryside. And I told my tour guide when he picked me up, I was like, I'm going to the hotel. I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And he was like, at least come to my house so my wife can make you lunch. So I ended up going to his house and hanging out with him, his wife and his young son. And it was just, you know, so incredible. Like when I was in Venezuela, my tour guide and his mom was driving us and he was the guide. And they invited me to their home at the end of the day. And they were like, we've never had any of our clients in our home, but they had me, you know? And so I think I'm really good with people, but yeah, the Middle East, no, it's so like, I love Jordan. I love Lebanon. I really enjoyed Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq was great. And so I think we have to be really careful. Like it's a country, you know, like Afghanistan, it's super horrific what's happening there. And like, I know people are there. Yeah. Like, luckily the guy and his family, I know they got out, But what's happening there is horrible. And it's America's fault. Like, let's not even get that. But there's borders. Like, there are hard borders. You know what I mean? Yeah. And those countries around are also very conscious and aware of, like, sealing their borders, if you will. So everything is really quite isolated to the country that it's in. In Iran, the U.S., they don't like their government. But, like, Iranians are cool people. Nice. Like, they're just fun.
Now, I was interested to know, how many languages do you speak? And does that ever become a barrier for you when you go to certain countries?
Yeah, so I speak French, which is super useful. I cannot imagine traveling through Francophone Africa without speaking French. Like, it would be very, very hard, period. Like, I don't know how people do it. Because I did most of that solo, and, like, a lot of people don't speak English. When you go to Niger, nobody's speaking English. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not happening. So that definitely helped me. And then, like, Spanish, I find most Spanish speaking countries, you can find a lot of people that speak English, but I feel like my little knowledge of Spanish helped me to, like, build better relationships or, like, you know, just have, like, that extra little interaction that I wouldn't otherwise if I didn't speak, like, a little bit of Spanish. But yeah, I think outside of that, so here's the trick. If you're traveling somewhere and you need to find someone who speaks English, look for, like, a 12 to 15 year old. Because I feel like no matter where you are in the world, that age group will speak English.
Wow.
Gotcha. So,
especially with social media and everything, they're seeing everything that's going on. Yeah, nice.
That's my little trick. Nice. So if you're struggling, find a little kid and be like, you, come here. I know you speak English, and they will help you. Like, I've definitely used that traveling.
Gotcha. Wow. Look at that.
Now, as a photographer, I'm a photographer too. Is that one of the things that you have to do to every country that you go to? You have to catch photographs. Has that become, back to the money, a source of funding as well, being able to sell photos or not even? What are you taking pictures of?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I've been shooting for so long. So there's, like, my personal work, which is, like, not pictures of me. And then there's all these damn pictures of me. And it's interesting. So I'm working on my book with National Geographic, which is currently on pre-sale on Amazon.com.
National Geographic.
Wow.
With National Geographic. Wow. It's coming out in May. And it's really great because it's about 100 countries and there's photography for every country. Nice. And I think it's the first time people are going to see a lot of my work as a photographer. So there's pictures of me, but there's a lot more pictures that I have taken.
Beautiful.
So that part, me taking those images, I don't feel like takes away from the travel, but definitely sharing it does. And so during quarantine or the pandemic or whatever hell we were living in, I did some covert trips. And because I was trying to be covert, I wasn't sharing. And it was the best thing ever because I was just living, you know what I mean? Yes. I didn't feel like, oh, I need to post this on social so people can see where I'm at and da 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 da. And there are some countries where I just didn't really post because I just didn't feel like it. But when, you know, once everybody was, like, a part of the journey, I felt like I got to show them something. But so now it feels much better to be able to just travel and not be like, I got to take a picture of this food and post it. I got to, you know, now I'm just like enjoying. So that's good. Different now.
I'm not going to ask your favorite country, but I'm going to ask you, what are a few of the countries that you think people have to see at some point within their lifetime?
That's very specific, and I appreciate you. Let's see. Namibia is just such a beautiful and interesting country, and just the landscapes are so unique. So I love Namibia.
I don't even know where that is, but it's gonna go on my list.
It's in Southwest Africa. So a border is South Africa, and a border is the Atlantic Ocean. The United States, I don't think we explored enough. I've been to 43 states.
Okay.
I love New England. Like, Maine is my jam.
Okay.
I love Vermont and New Hampshire, but Utah is probably my favorite state. I've probably been, like, 4 times in winter and in summer.
Like Salt Lake City or just the outskirts? Like
Salt Lake City, Park City, but Utah has amazing national parks like Zion. Yeah. Like, it's just incredible.
Wow.
And so I think we need to explore. I love Montana. Like, we have to explore more Wyoming.
Right. You
know, like, Kanye West likes Wyoming.
I know. He owns two ranches there. So, like, I definitely think the United States. We're at Cuba. Cuba is just such an incredible country. I'm so sad. They're supposed to be opening their borders soon. I went 4 months, 4 times in an 18-month period. Like, I fell in love.
You knew they were going to close it again. That's what it was. You're like, I'm going to get it in. I'm going to keep
going. That was way before. Because I haven't been to Cuba since 2018.
Okay.
I went there before there were commercial flights there.
Oh, nice.
Like, from the U.S., obviously. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So Cuba is definitely on the list. Japan, Italy, Egypt.
Talk to me about the technology in Japan. Like, because in my mind, I want to visit Tokyo and see their technology.
So I lived there in 2018. So what's interesting is, so emoji is Japanese. Like, emoji, that is a Japanese word, and the emojis are from Japan. So the little poop was one of the first emojis. And so they were using emojis back in 2008. And I remember, I still have my phone from Japan somewhere here. In 2008, when you wanted to get somebody's number, you would just zap your number to the phone. Like, you would zap your, there was a little infrared thing, because it wasn't Bluetooth. There was like this little infrared thing, and you would just zap it. And simple. I was just like, this is so crazy. And still, you'd be like, give me your number.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing? So what else? Like, obviously they have Shinkansen, which is their bullet train, and it uses magnets, like, reverse, so it gets that it propels it.
Wow.
Because, you know, if you put bounce off of each other, whatever, you know. So, like, they have high speed rail throughout the whole country, which is like it's so insanely fast. I think it's like 300 miles per hour. It's insane. And it's like, they've been having it. What the hell are we doing in America?
In New York, people are still jumping into the tracks, like, every other week.
Hop and turnstiles and metro cards don't work.
Trains.
Yeah. Yeah.
We weren't about the McDonald's ice cream machine not working. They're 20 years ahead of us.
No. They got 300 mile per hour trains. They get to work. I wanted to ask, obviously, outside of photography, what is the one thing you have to do in every country you go to? I mean, it might be food, it might be their wine, but is there any have to do that you do when you step into every country?
Oh, that's interesting. I think for me, I just really want, like, a deep cultural experience. So I talk to people a lot. Like, I'll talk to bartenders, concierge, like, whomever, taxi driver, because I'm like, where do you eat? That's probably like the big thing. I'm like, where do you eat?
I want the, like, real stuff.
Right. They're like, you can't go there. Your stomach can't handle it. I'm like, no. I want to know where you eat. Yeah. I've never had food poisoning. Wow. And I've eaten in some sketchy places.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. My stomach is protected by positive energy.
Yeah.
That's like, what was it? Zimmerman was the guy who had the show on the Food Network. He used to travel everywhere and eat. I mean, you could do that too. That's like a whole nother range. That's, you could have a food show.
She said she doesn't want to travel world again.
Yeah, not again.
But you know what? I would prefer, I want to travel everywhere and drink. Not on some, like, I'm going to get drunk on TV type thing, but, like, I really love spirits. So, like, what I collect in every country, like, my bar is literally my passport.
That bar is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, and I love wine. I lived in Italy for 3 years. So, like, I love wine. When I went to New Zealand, I had 18 bottles shipped back to the U.S. So, like, I would love to do that. Like, just explore, like, the origins of wine is in Georgia, a country most people have never heard of and certainly cannot point out on a map. Beer's origins are in Iran, like, I want to go to these places, the origin of, like, gin and scotch and, you know, all of these different things. I would love to do that.
It sounds like a TV show.
It does.
You should do it.
Other than the book, which is available for pre-sale, as we said, is there anything else in the works for you right now?
Yeah, I have a TV show in development.
I felt it.
Not that. I wish it was that. I'm still trying to spell that idea. Nobody wants to take it on. I think because the U.S. is so conservative.
Yeah.
But I have a TV show in development. with Nat Geo. I'm like, am I supposed to say that? I don't know.
Exclusive. Well,
right.
If not, we could edit it out until it's time.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I have a show in development with Nat Geo. So nice. I think, honestly, my focus next year is definitely to continue telling stories that aren't really being told. I shot a commercial with Lexus last year in Oklahoma, and we told the story of Black cowboys. And this year we're going to New Mexico. Nice. I can't say more than that.
Okay.
But that commercial should be out next year. And so I really want to just continue to use my platform to tell stories that people would not otherwise hear, and really just to like get people to think differently about the world. Like, I love the question and the way you set up about the Middle East, because that's how a lot of people think about it.
Yeah.
And I think when people read my book and ultimately are able to watch the show, that they're really, I think it's going to just open people's minds and just change the way that we look at someone living in another country just because they're different. But I hope to make everybody feel more familiar and really feel like the world really is our neighborhood. And like, we're all just neighbors living in different neighborhoods versus like strangers living in different countries.
Yeah.
So that's what I aim to do with my platform next year.
Nice.
Love it.
Now, throughout this entire journey, we would definitely be understanding if there were sacrifices that were made. What were some of the biggest things that you feel you've sacrificed on this journey?
Gosh. I think personal relationships. Like, I look at a lot of my friends, and number one, we're not as close just because I'm not there. You know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. People are like, well, I don't know where you are. What time's
on? I'm busy.
Like, my phone works everywhere.
Yeah.
But you know, there is that physical distance, which creates distance. You know, dating.
Yeah.
That is like, I know it's just hard in general, but like the perception that men have of me, like this dude literally the other day was like, so what, you have a guy everywhere you go? I'm like, what? I actually have no one. and I think it's because of that perception. Like, you know, there's like these small little things that he's
like, I don't even know if I could trust you going everywhere. So I'm not doing this.
Wow. Legit, like all my, like even my cousin, every time I come home, he's like, tell me a new story. I'm like, I don't have a story. Like, people
your cousin wants to know your stories.
He's literally I need to live through you. Tell me what you did. I'm like, I did nothing, sir.
I do want to ask though, like from a romantic note, have there been different people in different countries that are like, I must do my best to impress you. You're here for a short time. Here's the most grandest thing I can show you. Does that happen once in a while?
I'm like, no, grand gestures? No. I'm like, am I forgetting something? I mean, you know, like I've definitely hung out with people in different places. There is no grand gesture that is top of my mind.
Like, here's my palace.
Eat, pray, love situation.
I know. There's been some cute moments for sure.
Okay.
But I think, I mean, you're a guy, you can tell me, but I think just for a lot of guys, their brain can't even, because if a woman tells you how many people she slept with, you think of them all with her at the same time. Right. Like, you slept with five guys.
Oh,
you had sex with five guys at the same time. Like, no.
What the heck?
So I think I see, like, even now dating, there's so much hesitancy and, black male, fragile ego, all that. Anyway.
I'm going to say another thing right there too. Call it what it is. Some guys are so broke that they're going to be intimidated. Like, how am I going to keep up with this? I can't afford to fly all over the place. I'm not doing this.
This is her passion. Yeah. How can I even like enjoy time with her? Yeah. If
oh yeah, that's true. I mean, we're definitely looking for a certain tax bracket.
Okay? Right.
100%.
Absolutely.
As you deserve.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have to be equally yoked. But I think even men with money, you know, I don't think it's necessarily only about the money or lack of it. I think it's just like, you know, like that feeling of, well, you've been to every country in the world. What can I show you? I'm like, but if you're a construction worker or something, like, I don't know anything about that. Like, you have something to teach me. You know what I mean? If you're an accountant, I'm terrible with numbers and whatnot.
We can still learn from each other.
So yeah, it's, you know what I mean? So I, it's like trying to convince them that just because I've been to every country in the world, which I actually hold back on, which that's a whole nother
kind of. You didn't even bring that up at first.
That
because
oh no.
It can be intimidating. Yeah. It,
it takes a lot. Like I've got to, I'm like, it might not even come up on the first date. Legit. Like
you have to use like an alias so they don't Google you.
I know. It's like, it's really hard because especially like with dating apps, like I don't put my Instagram on there. People ask me for my oh, do you have social? I'm like, I don't. Or I'll be like, I just prefer not to share.
Yeah.
And I try to like keep the like information to a minimum. Okay. So I can talk about myself, but I try not to give too much information.
Right.
Because I'm like, I don't want them to be able to Google me. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Like my friends are like, you got to stop doing that. But I'm just like.
It's tricky. Because here's the thing. I'm a DJ. And if I meet a guy and I don't tell him that I'm a DJ, I don't tell him like the DJ name, I'll tell him my real name. Like, my name is Tamika. Like, I'm not going to tell you Olivia, nothing. Cause I don't want you to literally go on the Instagram page and come up with a preconceived notion and thinking that, oh my gosh, well, yeah.
I get it.
Right.
Yeah, right. Because with all the guys having sex with them in the club. Oh, no.
Behind the tables at the booth.
At the same time. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not necessarily that they will have a bad impression of me, but it's just whatever that impression is. If you don't know anything about me and you get to know me,
right?
Then when you see everything else, it's not as, you know, right. It's not as intimidating.
Because you're like, oh, well, I got to know her. They could be viewed as pluses at that point. Like, she's cultured. She knows. Yeah.
Let me tell you before you get whatever information you get from other people's perceptions or their information that I gave them. Let me say it first.
Exactly. But now for all of the men who are listening, if you know who I am, you
want
to.
Yes.
And if you're not intimidated.
Right. If you're not intimidated.
Accept the applications.
Step forward.
It's cuffing season.
Oh, yes, you're right. Girl. Listen, we trying to get our lives together. I hear you. Same here. You don't got to be Aladdin. You don't got to show me the world. But listen, come correct.
I'm going to start telling them that. You don't got to be Aladdin.
Yes, come on.
No.
You think
yeah, no, I'm really like.
There you go. That's for you. That's right. Yep.
Now, we definitely spoke about the Nabongo list becoming part of your legacy, right? But outside of that, just for everyone, what do you think are some of the best ways to share the love of travel onto the next generation?
Well, what I intend to do is that a project that is really near and dear to my heart is I want to do a children's book series.
Awesome.
And I'm not going to talk about the details, but I think that's also going to be a huge part of my legacy because I grew up with so many books in my house.
Same.
My mom and dad just like that was so big for them. And the reason the world was open, like I have this Dr. Seuss book called My Book About Me. And in it, it had like every country in the world, which is super inaccurate now because this is from like the early, I think it was from the 80s or the early 90s. So it's very inaccurate. But, you know, like my parents exposed me to information like that when I was a child, like that book, because you had to fill it in. And I put the date. I filled that in 1991. I was 7 and I was looking at maps and like understanding where people live and like igloos and yurts and all of these different things. So I think the biggest way to do it is through children and not necessarily if you're not able to let like take them anywhere. Buy them books.
Yes.
Like it really opens their mind. It changes everything. Like I would not be who I am today without all of the books that I read during childhood. Yeah. Like I wouldn't be. So that it's really important to me. And that's another huge thing that I want to work on next year is like getting this children's book series. Getting an advance to write it. Getting it done. Yeah.
Now to bring it all the way back home, literally and figuratively, out of all the places you've been, you've decided that you will be right back in Detroit. So let's let's talk about that decision.
I love that.
And why Detroit at the end of seeing the entire world?
First of all, the city of Detroit needs to pay me as an ambassador.
Put it in the air.
Y'all heard it.
Right.
Come on, Michigan. Get it together.
Because I can be anywhere and I choose to be here. Honestly, like, Detroit is just so easy. You know, my friend Melissa Butler from the Lit Bar, we live in the same building.
Oh, wow. Small world.
Yeah. She lives in LA now, which makes me sad. But she still comes here every time she comes home because the business is still based here. She's like, oh, God, Detroit is just, it's so easy. It's so good. You know, like, we have a great airport that you can get, you know, most places in the world nonstop or with one stop. Just great people, good food. Like, it's so chill. I'm sure y'all know people. I feel like everybody knows people from Detroit,
yep.
But I just feel like people from Detroit are just so cool, so chill, like, and just fun. So it's nice being in the city. Obviously, I'm comfortable here. I know everything here. It's
home.
Chill. I'm, to be fair, like, I'm getting a place in LA in January. Okay. So I'll be spending more time in LA. But I'm now never give up my place in Detroit ever.
See, people in New York with a place in LA call it bi-coastal. What do you guys call it when you got a place?
I know.
In LA?
I was trying to figure that out. I'm like,
that's a good question.
You got to make up a name for that.
I'm gonna work that out in the trademark it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I mean, there definitely has to be people who are between. I do know there are people who are between Detroit and LA. Mm-hmm. If only me and Melissa. but and definitely like between Chicago and LA. Yeah. So we got to figure out that Midwest LA.
Yeah, because like bi-coastal sounds so cool. Like, yeah, I got a spot in both places, and
that is cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to circle back.
There you
when
go.
I come up with a very good idea. And then, then I'm going to blow that up.
Yes.
And then I'm going to encourage people who live in LA to also get a place in Detroit.
There you go. That's how you really give back to Detroit.
That's how you do it.
No, I mean, there's a lot going on in Detroit. Like, Detroit is it's a very cool city, and a lot is happening. And the next 5 years here is going to be really, really interesting for sure.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So is there any community-wise, that you're doing in Detroit? Do you have any plans? Do you have a community of people that are influencers like yourself?
Okay, so now you're pulling my card. So I don't leave my house a lot.
Girl, I hear you. Because
I think quarantine totally messed me up. Like, I literally recovering from surgery. Yesterday I left my house and I texted everybody. I was like, look, y'all, I'm coming to my house. Anybody want to get up? Like,
let's link up.
I'll be out for this block of time. I'm trying to see everybody I can see in this block of time. I always schedule a million errands the day that I leave my house. I'm like, I want to go out to eat, out to drink, because I'm outside. Because I don't know. So I'm from here, so I have a bit of a community, but I must admit I could do better for sure. And now I'm like, it's Friday. I feel like I'm gonna hit some people up. I'm like, let me go see what's outside.
Wow, you sound like me. I really thought like you're like, okay, social butterflies, just travel the world. Da, da, da. Look at that. Come on, introvert.
So when I come to New York a lot. When I'm in New York, I'm out. You know what I mean? but I think because Detroit is home and it's like my refuge, I'm just like,
keep it as such.
Let's stay cozy. That's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, is it weird at this point? Do you step outside and people are like, yo, there go Jessica right there. That's her. Like, does that happen to you at this point?
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
Almost anytime I leave.
Wow.
I get it.
So it's like, for example, again, I'm recovering. So my hair is growing out. People are like, oh, you're doing a little alphabet. I'm like, no, I haven't got a haircut. and I have a haircut scheduled for next week.
Come on, girl.
I'm going to LA. So I'm like, I'm going to get my life together. But we had elections. We're on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And thank God, my building is a polling location. So I go
building?
I'm like,
Your building's a polling location?
Yeah.
They usually do it in schools in New York. That's why.
No, in here they do it in some schools. Okay, okay. I don't know why my building is a polling location. Random. Like, I have no idea, but I love it.
Okay. So it's easy.
You know, I went down at like polls closed at 8. I was down there at 7:45. I'm like in a robe, a cute robe, but you know, I'm just like in pain. I just shuffled down. Man. And I'm just like, oh, please, God, let me just do this. And somebody recognized me. I was just like, oh, no. And she said something. And somebody else was like, oh, my God.
That's her. It's her. Detroit's favorite.
Everybody stopped, you know. So, yeah, it happens. Oh, it happens pretty much every time I leave my house, no matter what city I'm in. It happens, like, in airports. It happens everywhere, which, you know, it's great because I love it. Like one lady I remember in New York was like, oh, I've always been afraid to fly, but because of watching you, I got over my fear of flying. Awesome. I'm like, oh my God, like, that's amazing. So it's really cool. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm not even there yet. You know what I mean? I'm like, this book isn't out. This TV show is out. So I'm just like, what is it going to turn into?
Oh, yeah. That's going to take it to a whole nother level.
Right.
And y'all know a lot of celebrities and, you know, they don't leave their house.
Yeah. They don't.
Or they only do house parties. Right. Or, you know, they have security.
You got to eat over here instead. Like, yeah.
That's real because it's like, you want to be able to go to Trader Joe's.
Live.
Like, I remember I was in Trader Joe's and this guy came up to me. And again, it's really cool, but it's also like,
chucking some fruits, some produce.
You know what I mean? I'm just trying to buy some bananas. So it's still very cool, right? Because you're just like, it's so crazy to me that like people recognize me because I travel. Like, that is still weird, even though it's been so long. But yeah, at the same time, it's just like, what is this going to morph into, you know?
Hopefully all good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And positive energy all the time.
I get tables quicker. I remember one time I was at a Red Rooster and they were like, oh, it's like
I know how that go over there.
Okay. And yeah, one of the hosts recognized me. They were like, oh, no, we can get you a table. I said, yeah.
That's goals right there. That's an accomplishment for sure.
So, you know, I'm like, I'm here for that kind of stuff.
Right.
For sure. And it happened to me in Detroit the other day. Same thing. They were like, my friend went to get the table and he was like, oh, but I saw open table. So I went up and they were like, oh, hey, how are you? Yeah, don't worry. No, we can get you that right now. I'm like,
This way. We've had it saved for you.
Yes. We felt like you were coming.
We felt your energy.
A positive energy.
I mean, like, I love those perks for sure.
There you go. Well, we're definitely looking forward to the book.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to the TV show.
Absolutely.
And everything else you have cooking up.
Thank you.
All the exclusives.
I feel like we should do that when the book is out. We should do this live.
Can we?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, why not?
I like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's do it.
I would love to.
Yeah, let's do something in Brooklyn.
Perfect. That sounds like a vibe.
All for it.
Thank you.
Let's do it next summer. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jessica. We appreciate you coming on.
This has been fun. I feel like you guys are friends.
Yes. No, 100%. That's been the vibe. And that's the vibe we try to give out. But yo, it's been real. Jessica Nabongo. Miss Blue Dope.
Blue Dope. We out.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Blue Dope and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest, you can follow the crew on Instagram @BlueDopeTV.